Friday, September the 8th, the second of our 4 days at the ranch. I was up and back at work at 8:30 with Mr. Wells. Roy came out, and the three of us surveyed the little shield for the long hall lights. Between them, they designed a little molding and decided against the use of sconces on the other wall. Sconces in the little entrance are good, but the hall simply cries out for some texture, a wallpaper, a background for all the pictures that I'm going to hang there. The painted wooden chandelier in the little sitting room has gone up, and I like it very much. I spent the morning stuffing albums and books into the new bookcases, and the first decorative object that went in was Madame Shumatov's painting of FDR, my favorite of Lyndon's birthday presents of 67. And then right away we pulled the books out again, because it's obvious we need a color as a background for all the memorabilia, the artifacts, the treasures. And we took some masking tape and put up a flight of 20 or 30 more yellow birds in Lyndon's bath. There's so many hundreds of details in working on a house. I relish each success, revel in the sensuous pleasure of lovely colors put together, and find more abrasive all the things that are wrong. The big event of the morning was the arrival of a little van with four pieces of furniture that had been recovered, two brown velvet chairs for Lyndon's room, and we found they were wonderful when the off-white linen drapes went up and the spark of the red pillows was added, and especially when we hung the Wyeth, the one of covered wagons crossing the prairies in the blue, blue skies, and the Melvin Warren of the riders in the Big Bend country. It's going to be a good room. And the other two chairs with the bright yellow and green tie silk print for the sitting room, the yellow and white plaid curtains there, were a triumph too. But alas, about 2 inches too short. So down they had to come and go back to Houston. But it didn't matter. The rug pads went in today in no time at all. But the rugs themselves are not here yet. Yesterday, it had been a wonderful relief when John had wired us from the hospital, M.D. Anderson, in Houston, that Nellie's operation had turned out all right, no malignancy. A little before noon, he came up by plane for a visit with Lyndon. I knew it would be an important one. They were riding around together, and I told Mary to change from souffle to curried shrimp for lunch. This would have to be one of those meals that's served when the people want it and not when the food is ready. We were a big lunch table full, the five Nugents and Mr. Wells and Roy White and Linda and Chuck and Lyndon and John and the staff and I. Lyndon took a look at little Lynn, placid and roly-poly in his mother's arms, and said, "He looks like Alvin Sultemeyer. That is the last straw. The baby is going to have to go on Metrocal." After lunch, he and John continued their talk, with Jake Pickle joining them sometime, and they rode and rode, and I wished I could be with them. But I was struggling toward making decisions on my own bedroom. Mr. Wells had brought some more beautiful fabrics, a Fortuny in peach that I loved, and the fresh, exciting spring green and pinks in a chinois drawing, chintz, that I keep on coming back to. It was nearly 7 when I said goodbye to him. Many decisions made and more still to come, and put myself in the hands of Mrs. Frederick Berg for a shampoo and set. It was the wrong thing to do. I soon got a message from Lyndon on the business telephone that they'd been waiting for me all afternoon, and when could I join them? Sometimes I have to make a guess on timing, and sometimes I guess wrong. So I got out from under the dryer, not a moment for a comb out, and put on my lovely Madame Chang yellow robe, and with my hair all in little sausages, went down to join the president, the governor, and the congressman for what turned out to be a most serious and lengthy conversation of great import. Lyndon and John, and later joined by Jake, had spent an 8 or more hour session writing and talking about Lyndon's big decision, when and how to announce that he is not going to run again for the presidency. Jake's attitude, I think, was simply not to believe it, not to face up to it. Mm-hmm. He spoke of the other folks who were running, including himself. It would be hard on them, he said, and I found that rather flattering, really. John did believe it. We had, I think, convinced him earlier in the summer. Lyndon asked him to explain to me how he would write the announcement. It went something like this. First, you must do it early, to take it out of politics, to keep it from looking like you were running out, to make it fairer, to give more chance, of the other possible contenders. He spoke of the October 8th date at the dinner, or soon thereafter. And the reasons? Because he, the president, wanted to devote all his time, his brains, his energy, the coming 15 or 16 months, to bringing the war in Vietnam to a successful conclusion, to attacking the problems of the cities. In short, to working on the major difficulties that face this country. A campaign would necessarily siphon off hours and days of time and energy and brain power. He wanted to be free to do his best in the time he had. It was good reasoning. It was appealing. And I took the floor and talked about my feelings, that I simply did not want to face another campaign to ask anybody for anything, especially not to ask for and to acquire the obligations that went with receiving donations. And mainly, the fear that haunts me is that if Lyndon were back in office for a four-year stretch, beginning when he was 60 years old, that bad health might overtake him, an attack, something not quite incapacitating, and he might find himself straining to be the sort of president he wanted to be, to put in the 18 hours a day, and not be able to draw it from the once bottomless well of his energy. A physical or mental incapacitation would be unbearably painful for him to recognize and for me to watch. And who can tell? His Aunt Frank lived to be 90, and Aunt Jessie is still going strong in her late 80s, and his father died at 60. And he has had the most roaring energy and will of anybody I have ever observed. But it is not inexhaustible. I said something like, if we ever got sick, I wanted to be sick on our own time. And that broke the tension and everybody laughed. Somewhere in the course of it, I ordered in dinner on TV trays. There I sat in my sausage curls, eating and trying to help my husband and two good friends decide his future. It was past 10 when John left to fly back to Houston to join Nellie in the hospital. And I think we all knew that we would only really know what was going to happen when we heard it happen.